Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. Today's Daf Hayomi is Maseches Nida Daf Chaf Dalet. We begin on Chaf Gimel, Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom, with a ton of Rabbanon. So as we've been learning for the past few days, an Isha gives birth to a live, healthy child, the Mazel Tov, would have to observe days of Tumah, followed by May Tahara, after which she'll bring a carbon. Of course, this was adhered to in the time of Beis HaMikdash, the time of when they observed Tumah v'Tahara. And it is conditional upon the Vlad, the offspring, having potential for survival, for viability. So even if it's a miscarriage, but if it's a properly formed and somewhat developed entity, which would have potential, if gone full term, would have potential to survive, to live, that Vlad has validity and renders her a Yeledes with respect to observing the count, the Yemei Tumah, Yemei Tahara. But if the offspring is defective to the extent that it had no viability, had no potential for life, you see it's so defective, it's so deformed, that it doesn't have viability, even if it would have gone full term. In that case, there's no Tumas later. Toner Rabbon, here comes another example of such. Hamapeles. So the Isha discharges a guf otum, this entity, this body, which is otum, which is it's missing, it's an incomplete body. Ein imoit meleid, there's no tumas leid, it doesn't count. How do we define this? Veizeho, what is a guf otum? We have three opinions. Rabbi Omer, if it's missing to the extent that if it would have been a live person missing this much, he wouldn't survive. He would be considered a terefa. So likewise, this fetus presenting in a similar fashion does not have status. It's missing to the extent that if it would have been missing from a live person, the person wouldn't survive. So how much is that? What extent? Rabbi Zakai Omer Adha Arkuva. We turn to the next element. Rashi explains, Shenechtachu Ragleho Adlo Malam Narkuva. She treifa. What makes him a treifa? He's missing from the bottom up, all the way up and including the knees. So the absence of that part of the guf renders him so, you know, critically wounded, so missing, so incomplete that he wouldn't survive. And Rashi adds the words v'kasara treifa in achaya. He's of the opinion that a treifa does not really have survival abilities. And therefore, in the case of the fetus who presents likewise, it has no status. Rabbi Yana Eimer, you need more missing than that. Adlo Nukava, until the Nukava, the area where he sheds his waste, so that far up, and including that, that would render it, would lose its status as a fetus. Rashi adds, because he's going with the opinion that a treifa, merely a treifa, a wound that considers him a treifa, would not change the status in this case, because a treifa can theoretically live, perhaps not very long, but can live for a while. So it has status of a vlad, but if it's further up to the waist area, that's an avela, considered lifeless. Rabbi Yechonah Omer Shimon B'Yosef ben Yeshua, even further up, it must be missing ad makim tabura, until the place of his belly. But less than that, he would still have fetus status. What's the subject of machlekes here? What's the point of difference? Bein Rabbi Zakai, Rabbi Yamai, iki b'nai treifa chai, as we explained. Big question back in Maseches Chulin. One with a critical injury, treifa, whether it's a behemoth or a human. Does he have survival abilities? That would be the point of machlekes. Mar sovat treif al chaya, mar sovat treif en al chaya. First Shita, which says that once he's classified as treifa, he loses status because treifa has no survival abilities. The second opinion disagrees, missing only that much, even though he's labeled a treifa, a treifa can live for a while, in which case he has, you know, status. Ben Rabbi Yani, Rabbi Yochanan ben Benayu, what's the difference between the second and third opinions? Ika Benayu, the Rabbi Elazar. It's based on whether they adopt Rabbi Elazar's point or not. Domer Elazar, Nital Yorich, V'chalol Shelo, Nevela. If an animal is missing so much, his thigh and the chalol area, meaning the socket of the thigh, is just now exposed, he's worse off than a treifa. It's not really a wound. He's missing his whole life force. He's on his verge of death. He's lacking vitality to the point that he's not going to avail. And Rashi adds that he's going to convey tumah. Oh, he's dead. He looks alive, but he's really dead. So according to Rabbi Yanai, missing until the Nekavim area, that's like the Yorech and the Chalal, to such an extent, it's like a dead entity. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with that. And the only way to discount this fetus is if he's missing even further up, until the tiburoi, the stomach, the intestine area, which renders him a non-entity. Amrav Papa, Machlekes, this whole discussion, how much needs to be missing, Milamata Lamala, it's going bottom up, whether it's the knees, further up, further up, Avil Milamata Lamata, but if the missing part is starting from on top down, meaning it's missing part of the skull, Afilu Koldu Trey, even he's missing just a part of the skull, Tahir, because he can't survive like that. V'chein Amar Rav Gidla, Rav Yochanan, Ha'apeles as Shegul Goltoi, Ah, Tumah, Imetar, he discharges a fetus whose skull is missing a part. Mother is Tahir, has no status. V'Amar Rav Gidla, Rav Yochanan, another halach from the same source, Ha'apeles k'min ap kusa the diklav, she releases this entity, which looks like a stump of a palm tree. So it has these, Rashi says it's uniform, but then as you ride up to the top, you see like protrusions, like hands and feet. Totally the wrong location, totally the wrong place. It's like the branches off a palm tree. So Kusa, the branches are coming out of the palm tree. Imay Torah, she's Torah, because it has no status. Itmar. Hamapelas Mishapanam Musmasim. Another example of a defective fetus. She's Mapel, one whose face is partially sort of crushed and deformed. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Imay Tmeya. It's still called a Vlad. Rishlagish Amar Imay Tahira. It's not a Vlad. Eisfei Rabbi Yochanan Rishlagish. You say it's nothing. Hamapelas Yad Chatucha. Rabbi Chatucha, we had this price the other day. She releases this hand, a form of a hand. Chatucha, which has discernible fingers, or regal chatucha. So it's only part of an entity. Shall we assume the rest was inside? This is part of a full entity, and she's tamei leida. Imay tamei leida. We don't say shema meguf atem basa. Maybe it came from an incomplete body. No, we say it was certainly a fully formed, a developing fetus with all its, elements, and then it somehow got disintegrated. All that was left was the hand and the foot. Vimisa now, according to you, Rish Lakish, even a deformed face renders him a non-vlad. Listen, so when the Brisa refers to a theoretical concern, we're not concerned that maybe it's coming from, it should have referred to this possibility as well. Listen, it should have said, you know what, this hand, this foot, activates 2 months later, as opposed to, we're not concerned that it came from a Guf Atom, a missing body, or you. Or another possibility, which would be a discounting factor, or if he's a deformed face, if in fact that would discount it. I'm not a puppy. So we don't have an answer to that, but a puppy actually had a different version of this discussion. The pun of musmasan kliyamli pliki. That's me. If the face is deformed, partially deformed, all agree it doesn't cancel the validity of the vlad. She's tummy related. Kipligi bepon of tuchis. Machlokes is when the face is totally deformed. There's no features at all. Actually, the names are meant to be switched around. Rabbi Yechon Amar, Imoy Tohiro. He says, there are no discernible facial features. Face is the window into the actual, you know, essence of the entity. There's no face, there's no Tumas Leda. Because there's no Leda, there's no blood. Imoy Tohiro. Rishal Gashamar, even in this case, Imoy Tohiro. Asks the Gemara, well, now, if the tables have turned, why wouldn't Rabbi Reish Lakish now ask that same question that Rabbi Yechon asked before? He should have turned it around and asked it to Rabbi Yechon. If Rabbi Yechon says, in this case, it has no validity. He should ask him that price, which should have referred to a possible concern that maybe it's sourcing itself in a vlad whose face is totally... Because Rabbi Yechon could have simply answered, it's redundant. The Brisa referred to a non-entity, and this is just another variety of a non-entity. You don't have to, you know, list them each one separately. When the Brisa spoke about a missing body, this, you know, distorted face is also another version of that, so it's not like they left it out. B'nei Rabbi Chia continues to go with the story of Rabbi Chia's sons. They had real estate. They had, you know, fields out there, and they went to check out their fields. Enough if they went out to the village, the Kuryasa. And when they came back from their inspection, Asul Kamei, the Avoy, to the father of Chia, Amalam, he says, no. When you were out in the villages, did the local villagers take advantage of you? Did they approach you with a halacha shayla? Such distinguished, you know, guests. Did they, Amalam, kluma b'mas liyatchem? Did you encounter any stories, any halacha shaylas? Amalam, they said, actually, we had this woman who was mapil panam tuchos, this type of case with a distorted face. Baliyadena was presented to us. Viti meinua, what did we do? We made her tamei. We considered it a vlad. Amar lahem, Shabchia says to them, go back and correct it. Reverse your ruling. It's incorrect. It has no status. No face, no vlad. Zubitar umashitimesim, go bimatar, reverse your psak of tuma. Maidat chayu. Where are you coming from? Maidat taichu. L'chumra, you figured, okay, we'll be strict. Well, actually, Tumas Leda has two elements. It begins with a Tum'ah count, but followed by Yimei Tahara. So, in a sense, you're being Machmer, but you're also being Mekel. Because during the Yimei Tahara, any blood she sees is Tahar. So it's not just a Chumra, it's resulting in a leniency as well if you give it status, when you shouldn't have. It generates a kula as well. You're giving a yimei toyar, which you shouldn't have. Itma. Okay, here comes an interesting discussion on Pelas Bria. The woman discharges this entity. She has shnei gabim, u'shnei shadrois. It has two backs, two spines. Okay, so it has these Siamese backs with spines. Does this have any chance of survival? Big machleg is between Rav, who says no way, and Shmuel says yes. Amar Rav, b'isha ein vlad. If it happened by a woman, there's no vlad status, there's no tumas leida, b'mehima osu b'achila. Even if you discover this double-backed animal inside an animal that you slaughter, which typically would be reason to be matur, the ben pikua, right, that's discovered in the animal, in his case, it's a non-viable entity. It doesn't have status of a behemoth, of a living behemoth. It's not, it's like a novella, it's like a dead piece of... Ushmul Amar, he says, no, b'isho vlad, b'behemoth mutar b'achila. Discovered inside a behemoth, you can eat it. It's covered by the mother Shechita and by Isha, who miscarries this type of entity. It has status, and she has 2 months later. Unfortunately, points out, even Shmuel would agree if this double-backed animal is really born. Of course, it's Aser. That is what's called shesua, discussed in the Chumash Devarim, a type of animal which is non-kosher. But it was speaking that within the mother, we're not trying to, you know, evaluate it on its own, define it on its own, as its own entity, its own species. It's inside another animal which had been shechted. So whatever's in an animal is mutter. And this is like any other animal, which is mutter through the mother shechita. That's Shmuel's opinion. Okay, what's the background of this machlokes? Answers the Gemara by Rav Chanan bar Abba. Damar Chanan bar Abba. We take a close look at that pasuk in Dvarim, Perek Yudalad Pasuk Zayin, which has a listing of non-kosher animals. Amongst them, we have a unique name of an animal, unmentioned in Vayikra. So this animal is unique to Dvarim, Hashisua, which is a bria, a type of animal, Sheishla, described exactly as such. Shnei Gabin, Shnei Shadroins. The Torah forbids its consumption. In what fashion? For this we have a Machlekes Rav Mishmo. Rav Amar Bria Ba'al Malasa. Rav says there's no such existence, there's no such species of a Shesua. You'll never find them running around. Unless you discover it inside a cow, inside a goat. So it's like sort of a disfigured goat or disfigured cow. Otherwise, you'll never find it. So when the Torah forbids it, it specifically, even though it was discovered inside another kosher animal, ki agur rachman gomesh, and Hashem taught Moshe that it's forbidden. B'mei ima agmari, it was referring to an animal discovered within a mother animal. It has no viability. It's like an avela. It's asr. Ushmol lo mabriya ba'al meisa. Shmol disagrees. It can happen that you'll have one of these things running around. Ki agmer rachman gomesh ba'al magmari. The Torah says, don't eat it. It means, you know, a regular shesua should not be eaten. But if it's within the mother animal, it becomes, you know, it's part of the mother entity. And since, according to Shmuel, it has viability, it's like any other animal, and we don't have to identify it by name, by its own class. It's secondary, it's bottle, it's tuffle to the mother animal. Shari, it's mutatit. Esvei Rav Shimi Bar Chila Rav. Rav Shimi Bar Chila was actually Rav's grandson. So went over to the Zaydi, he says, have a kasha. Raisa says, Rabbi Chanin ben Tignas Omer, kol sheyesh loy, shnei gavin, u'shnei shadroiz, posel avod. So we have a bechor, we have a bechor animal, which has kedusha, unless it's a, you know, baal mum, it's a blemished animal, and you can't bring it as a carbon. An example of such is the double-backed animal. Pasul avoid, you can't bring it as a carbon. Al b'dechoye. Now the fact that the Mishnah refers to it as a, you know, b'chor bal mum, disqualifying it from hakrava, indicates that otherwise he's good to go. He's kosher, right? He's a surviving entity. He's not an avela. In contrast to what we're saying till now, that this thing doesn't really have kashrut status. According to Rav, even inside the mother animal, according to Shmuel, certainly once it's born. Armalais, he says to his grandson, with adoration, Shimi at, oh, you're my grandson Shimi, right on. You're always on target. But let me explain it to you. Let me answer your question. So first he validated his question, and then he answered him. He says, look, the Brisa that you quoted, the blemish that you're describing there is not what we're talking about. We're talking about actual double back, actual Siamese spines. That's talking about sort of a bent back, like a hunchback animal, which looks like two parts put together. That's a different story. That's okay. That can survive and live for 120. Meisve, now comes another kash. Yesh buborin shein asurin. So you have buborin, unborn, you know, animals, which, if, you know, discovered inside the mother animal, are, of course, permissible, even if they're not fully full-termed, right? Because anything in the mother, babahim, anything in the behem is mutter. But once it's born, if it's not viable, if it's born too premature, shein asur, nubi asur, because they can't survive, it's like an avela. Ben abola dako, so by behemah daka, which is, you know, the lighter type of like a goat, like a sheep, where full term there is 5 months. If this one was born after 4, too early, premature, he's not going to survive. Ben shmona lagasa, by a heavy animal like a cow, it's a 9 month gestation period. So if it's born in 8 months, too short, too early, premature, and certainly younger than that. Hemena lamata, of course, is us. The Brisa continues. This is an exception. In a minute, we'll just try to figure out what the Brisa had in mind. Yotz, as opposed to Mishi Eshle Shnei Gavin, Shnei Shadroiz, as opposed to the double-backed animal. was a different story. In what way? What does that mean? My yotze. What does it mean? He has his own story. Love. Yotze mechlal ubar. Apparently, the rice is contrasting the shesua, right, the double-backed animal, to the other unborn animals inside their mothers. That, in contrast to those young, premature, unborn animals which are mutter, because they're still in the mother, they're included sort of in the mother's package, as long as they're not born. Once they're born, of course, like we said, it's asur, but inside the mother, the mutter, as opposed to the double-backed entity, shafilu b'me'imun asurin, even discovered inside the mother animal, it's asur. And this seems to be siding with Rav's opinion. It's like an avela, has no chance of survival. Even inside the mother, he can't eat. So as the Gemara hold it, Rav matalat tamei, Shmuel matalat tamei. Rav and Shmuel have different ways of learning the brisa. Rav matalat tamei. Rav will now explain this brisa according to his opinion. And the Mepharshim point out that really there's somewhat of a difficulty, even according to Rav. It's certainly a kasha on Shmuel, because here in the brisa it says that this double-backed entity will be usher even inside the mother. But it's also somewhat difficult, according to Rav as well, because it implies, it sounds from the brisa like this double-backed entity would be okay even after birth, which according to Rav is us. So each Amira will now have to sort of tweak the brisa based on his position. Rav mitaretz l'tamei. Rav will explain the brisa alongside his opinion as follows. That the brisa, in referring to the double-backed creature, is actually forbidding it while inside the mother. And we're speaking strictly inside. Rav mitaretz l'tamei. Ben arba l'daka, ben shmoina l'gasa. We have these, premature fetuses, a 4-month daka, 8-month gaso. Heimer al mata aser. Certainly, if it's younger than that, it will be aser. Bame devar mamurim. What are we talking about? Kishiyot al ever oilam. Once it's born, aval bame imo ishari. But still, unborn, it's okay because it's still considered part of the mother's entity. But that's limited to these. But a double-backed entity, yotza, as opposed to mishiyeshle shnei gabin, shnei shadrois. In that case, even while inside, it's aser. It's a non-viable entity. It's an avela. Da'afilu b'me'imu nami aser. And that's the ishesua, which is considered a non-kosher entity. Says Rav's approach. We turn to him. Shmuel mitaras tamei. Shmuel will interpret the price according to his view. Ben arbo l'daka, ben shmoina l'gasa. The premature animals. Heimen l'mata osur. If it's even less developed than that, certainly it's osur. Bameh devar mamur. When do we say that these things are osur? And according to him, we're talking when it's already born. So these young, premature entities are osur because they're not viable. When do we say so? It's born prematurely. But if it's a full term fetus, full 5 months by the daka, full 9 months by motor, of course you can eat it. Even in its unborn state. As opposed to the double backed animal, that has an additional layer of isra. The avagav kol chadoshav. Even if it's a full-term fetus, im yatsa lavir oilam aser. So if it's born, it's aser, because then you have to sort of evaluate it on its own, by its own merits. And as we said before, it's considered a non-kosher entity, that's a shesua, but if it's still within the mother, you can deem it as part of the mother's entity, me'imo yitzshari. Okay, so Rav and Shmuel have different ways to understand the brisa. Brisa forbids the double-backed animal, according to Rav. Even within the mother, according to Shmuel, only once born, but within the mother, it's sort of packaged within the mother's entity and its mother. Okay, so we had a discussion about this animal with the Shnei Gavin, Shnei Shadrois. It pertained to whether the mother, a human mother, would be liable to the whole system, the whole count of Tumas Leida. Rav says no, Shmuel says yes. Rav says it has no viability, Shmuel says it does. And in a similar fashion, we discuss the kashrus, if it were an animal born in this fashion. All agree, once it's born, it would be aser. But still within the mother's entity, Shmuel says, well, according to Tosfos, it has viability, and although once born, it's aser, because it's called the yeshesua, but while still within the mother, it's sort of embedded within the mother's entity, and it's mutter. And Rav disagrees. It's such a non-viable entity. It's like an avela, even when it's when it's still in its unborn state. Tony Tanak made the Rav. There was a chacham that presented a brisa to Rav. I'm a pelas brias. Guf. So we have this stump. So a woman miscarried this entity, which doesn't have much formation. It's like a block of wood. Or it's a head, a face, which has no, just a round ball. Does that trigger the whole Tumas Leida system? Talmud Leimar, no, has no viability. It can't survive. Isha, he says, so we speak about a woman giving birth, who begins the count of Yimei Tuma. The pasuk refers to the Bris Mila. There's a link between the two. Only a child who has that potential has the ability to survive and to have a bris. He qualifies for Tumas Leida. Misha roi le bris le shmoina, right? His roi to make a bris at 8 days. Yotz roi, as opposed to these phenomena we just discussed, which have no viability. She'enon ruin le bris shmoina, it's not not roi for a bris on the 8th day. And therefore, there's no Tumas Leida. Amar lei, Rav's added to him. He says, look, Sayim Bahachi, you should conclude the brisa with another example of a non-viable entity. That's the double-backed entity we spoke about before. V'chein, likewise, v'shiyesh lo yishnei gav, v'shiyesh adroi, it's a double-backed entity. It's not roi l'bris shmoyin, it's not roi to survive. Therefore, there's no Tumas Leida. Okay, now comes halach l'maisa, Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba Sovar, he figured, we'll go with Shmuel's opinion, and we'll apply Tumas Leida. By Nisha, who gave birth to this type of Amr Leis, Rav Huna tells him, my daitach, what are you basing it on? The Chumrah, because you're going to be strict? Well, actually, as we discussed before, the Tumas Leida is a double edge, it's like a double system. It has a Chumrah, but it leads into a Kula. The Chumrah, the Asil, the Kulahu, the Kehavis law. You're giving her Dmei Tayar, days of Tahara, which wouldn't be justified if it's not a Evlam. And therefore, he says, Avod Miyo, Kabesa de Rav. You know what? Go the short way. Go with Rav. The Kaimel and Hilchos Kavaseh Karabi Yisure, because we have this tradition that we go with Rav in matters of Isra V'Heter, whether it generates a Chumrah or a Kula, be on the safe side. Bein the Kula, bein the Chumrah. Amar Rav. Now comes an interesting point. We discussed the premature births of these animals, right? The 4-month Daka, which was a month short, or the 8-month Gasa, which is a month short. Now we know that by a human, Isha, at least in the time of Chazal, the only child that can survive viability was related to either a full term baby, a 9-term baby, or 7-month. So it was either born in the 7th or the 9th. An 8-month baby couldn't survive. So what about in a similar fashion by an animal? We have this behemoth gasa. Ideally, it should be a 9-month gestation period. What if it's a 7-month stretch? So the Rice spoke about 8 being non-viable. What about number 7? Which is ironic because it's shorter, but perhaps just like by human, it's 7 or 9. What about by the behemoth gasa? Amar Rabbi, Amar Hari, Amar, we know for a fact. Isha led this Letisha, he led this Leshiva. A woman can give birth to a healthy child either at 9 or at 7. Behemagasa, he led this, Letish, Behemagasa as well. A full term is 9. I have a question. Does 7-month work as well? He led this, Leshiva, or Loyalda? Can it work at 7 or not? Amr Rahmar, Yitzhak Tashma, let's bring it right from that price. A 4-month Daka, an 8-month Gasa, doesn't work. And certainly younger than that, Heyman Olamata is also. My Lava Gasa. Let's assume it's referring to the Gasa as well. So 8-month doesn't work, and certainly less, only 7. Lo, Yadaka, no, maybe it's only going on the Daka, whose full term is 5. But if it's four or less, it doesn't work. It's too short. But maybe, you know, if you just trim off from the nine, starting point is nine. So, yeah, eight doesn't work, but maybe seven does. Maybe that's sufficient for its development. Hai mai, says the Gemara, hold it. You can't say that. Yamas v'shleim agaso. If, when the Brisa spoke about premature not working by the gasa as well, so I understand why the Brisa had to point it out. Could you think, maybe, you know, it's long enough. You don't need that much. Seven could work too. It's rich. There's a reason to talk about it. There's room to think. Perhaps the animal has a parallel system to the Isha. Just like when the Isha works with seven. That prompted the Brisa to point out, no, Behemah is different. Seven doesn't work, just like eight. Eli Amras Adaka Itma, but if the Brisa is speaking about the Daka only, that just as four doesn't work, certainly three, Pshita, obviously, how could it? It's barely 3 months old. Pshita Bastlosa Yarchim Kochai, how could you have a 3 month viable offspring? So, how does the one know? Maybe it's just about deducting two. Whatever the sum total is, if it's nine, go down to seven, it's okay. If the starting point is five, so three is also fine. It's not a matter of months, it's a matter of, you know, proportions. Istrich. The Brisa did have to point out that a three-month gedaka doesn't work. You would think maybe it does, because it's barely 2 months off the sum total. So there's room to think. Whenever you deduct, you know, 2 months of the total, it works. By the Isha, go down to seven. By the Behemagasa, likewise. And by the Daka, three maybe worse. Right? Kamash Malon. Therefore, the Brisa had to tell you that by the Daka, it's different, because the starting point is so short, it's only 5 months. So four doesn't work, it's certainly three. But maybe by the Gasa, since the starting point is a much greater number, nine, so maybe seven works, just like by the Isha. So we haven't really resolved this question. It becomes a new scenario. Omar Avidom Hashmoha Pelas Muslilis Isha miscarries something which appears like a demon. So it has a human-like look, but with wings. Very unique phenomenon. Imoit Meileh, that qualifies as a Vlad for 2 months later. Vlad is considered a Vlad, El Sheishli confined, but he has the add-on feature of wings. Tana Mihal, we find the same in the Brisa. Omar Avidom Masad was actually a story. It's not just theoretics. It was a story in a place called Bisimoini. Ba'acha she appealed Muslilis, a woman had this phenomena. Ubamas and Chacham was presented to Chacham. Amr, they said, yep, has a legal status of a Vlad. Vlad will sheishli confine. What about Ahapelas Mus Nachash? This charge is something which has a snake-like appearance. Hoira Chanina. Here comes the whole story. So who ruled on it? The Chacham's name was Chanina, who was the nephew, Ben Achil, the brother's son, Shel, of Rabbi Shua. He says it qualifies. Ima, the mother is male lady. Halach Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef went ahead and had a discussion. V'sipa Dvarim presented the story of Fnei Rabbi Gamliel for the Nasi, the leader. That there was a Rod, there was a person, or Chanina ben Achash Rabbi Shua, who considered it a Vlad. Pretty, you know, surprising ruling. Shalach Lai, Rabbi Gamliel sent a message to Rabbi Yeshua, come along with your nephew for a discussion. Let's see where he's coming from. We have to investigate, you know, the source of this surprising ruling. Haneg, bring along with you Ben Achicha, your nephew, boy, and come with me to justify this ruling. Okay, so Yeshua and his nephew got on the road on the way to Rabbi Gamliel, about the chasn on their journey. Yatsa Kalas Chanina lacrosse. So it happens that Chanina, the nephew's daughter-in-law, came out towards Rabbi Shua with a shayla. Lo and behold, this exact story. Amalei, she tells him, Rabbi, ha'peles kim nachash ma. What would you say if she discharges a nachash? Amalei, he says, no validity. Ima tohira. Amalei, so she responded, but I heard in your name, Aloi mishimcha amalei chamoisi, my mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law is now the wife of Chanina. Chanina being Rabbi Shua's nephew. So my mother-in-law told me that Imaya Tmeya, it does generate 2 months later. But Amala, and Rabbi Shua, you know, was caught off guard, surprised, says, really? I'm being quoted as having ruled that it's considered a valid vlad. Mezatam, do you call why? Did she tell you the reasoning, the rationale behind my ruling? And she says, yeah, I'll tell you that what you said was because the configuration of the eye, it's a round eye like a human eye, so it has similar features and similar status. Ooh, when he heard that, it jogged his memory. Because it was more than just the halacha, it was the background, it was the rationale. Medoch based on her words, Niska Rishua, so her words trigger Rishua's memory, and he recalled that in fact, he's the source of this ruling. It wasn't his nephew's own invention, it came from him. Me, Rabbi Shua, I ruled and I gave the Shalach Leidram Gliel, so he sent a message from Gliel, blame it on me, Mipi Hayrachanina, Chanina was coming from me. And this is the halacha based on the Amar Abayis. Abayis says, we have an interesting lesson from this story. Whenever a Rav has asked, a Shaila, ideally, it shouldn't just be a one word answer. Rebelsky was always there. Rebelsky Atzal always, no matter what time, day and night, it wasn't just mutter aser. He'd sit on the phone, he would explain, this is the rush, this is the Ramah, and he would go into the background, he would walk away with an understanding, a background, almost like, it was like a teaching moment for him. Let me teach you how to analyze the Shaila, how to come to proper conclusions. Amar Abayi Shmamer, we learn from this, Tzum Rabbonon, a Talmud Chacham, the Amar Milsa, who presents, halacha, Leimu Batayim, should add a reason to it. The Chimat Karloi Mitkar. Because this way, in the future, if he's reminded of it, it will be easier. So if he forgets, it will be easier to remind him based on the background and the understanding. Continues the mission. So back to the Isha, who described it as some fetus-like, entity. The question is whether it has validity to trigger 2 months later. Apelos Shafir. Shafir is the external... like the shell of the fetus, like the skin, the membrane, which doesn't really look very much like a fetus. In fact, it's filled with liquid, shafir mali mayim, mali dam, full of blood, mali gnunim, various colored liquids in there. Eina chashesh lo vlad. She need not be concerned that there was a vlad there, because these are clearly very undeveloped entities, not indicative of much going. But Mayim Rukam, if the sphere was formed, so the limbs are sort of discernible somewhat, so now you see it was on its way to being a child and has validity. Teisha Lezachon Nekeva, so now she has to be Machmer. She doesn't know the gender is undefined, so she has to treat herself as though she gave birth to a Zachar, which has a shorter span of Yimei Tahara, only 33 days. And regarding Yimei Tumah, she has to observe the 2 weeks of the Tumah's Leidav Nekeva, just in case. Hapelas Sandal, let's say she discharged something which looks like a sandal. Sandal means it's a fetus whose face was sort of bashed in, it was crushed by his companion, by a twin fetus alongside him. Or she notices this placenta, the embryonic sac. That's all she has to show. So in this case as well, she has to observe both tracks just in case, because the sandal is considered a vlad, and the shilya, well, it's not actually a vlad, but where there's smoke, there's fire, there's a shilya, there's a sack, there must have been a vlad there that, apparently disintegrated, but there was a vlad. Teisha l'zachar nekev, she has to observe both tracks, zachar nekev. Ask the Gemara, Bishloimo, Damamai. I understand, the first two examples. The shfir filled with water, filled with blood. Loiklumi, it has no status. Elagnunim, but the colored material. Necha shema vlad hava v'nimayach. That seems to indicate that there was something there, a vlad that disintegrated. Amar Abaye, it wouldn't have disintegrated to this extent. If it would have been developed to the point of validity, it would not have just turned into this, mush. Amar Abaye, kama yayin chai. Look, you need to drink an excessive amount of alcohol, of wine, to dissolve this developed fetus. Kama yayin chai, how much wine, undiluted wine, strong wine, do you think she drank? Shasas ime shalzed, the mother of this drink, shenemayach uber zechmei, which would have dissolved the uber. Meaning, certainly never happened. That it was really something going, so we don't give it status. Rabba Amar, molitnan. Rabbi gives a different reason why. There's no concern of a vlad, because we're talking that it's filled to capacity, this pouch. V'misa dismuche mitmach, and in fact, if it was really already a partially developed fetus that just dissolved, michsa chosa would be missing. There would be some space in that sack. Because when something, you know, dissolves, it sort of shrinks, and there would be some, you know, empty space. Ravada baraba omar gvanim tana. Look, the mission says colors. V'misa dismuche mitmach, and in fact, it was a fetus that dissolved, kulu v'chad gav ma'av kai, it would be one consistent color. You wouldn't have, you know, various colorations. Tanya v'shol aimer. Okay, speaking of which, we spoke about the alcohol causing all kinds of, you know, ramifications. V'shol says, I'll tell you some interesting stories. V'shol aimer. Kovir mesim ha'isi, I was involved in the Chaver Kadisha, burying people. V'isim istaka b'atam v'shol mesim. Their tradition was that after they buried and the all that was left was with bones, they would go relocate the bones into some... like these burial caves. So he was involved in transferring the bones, and he would observe the differences between different. Observe the bones of the mason. Now it's an interesting phenomenon. If a fellow was accustomed to drinking, you know, raw wine, strong wine, he would have these burnt, you know, like dried out bones, which were affected by this strong alcohol effect. Mazuk. A fellow who would drink overly diluted wine, which didn't have much body left, that's Moisef Sechuyin. His bones would be blackish, it would be lacking in nutrients. But Karoi, a fellow who drank well-balanced, you know, wine, properly diluted, not too much, not too little, his bones looked healthy and lush. That's Moisef Meshucha. They were nice and smooth and healthy. And likewise, V'chol Mishish Siyasimur Machilosai, if a fellow would, you know, regularly drink more than his food, as myself srufen, his bones would be dried up. The opposite, too much food, more than drink, as myself schuin would black. Karoi, if you had a well balanced diet, as myself looked healthy and lush. Meshuch. Tanya, furthermore, says up a shol, Aimer, ibi tema samser beichon, kabrimisim isi, I was involved in bearing mesim, but machas, one time, ratz deachar tzvi, I was chasing after a tzvi. And our show points out that this and the next story are not to be taken literally. It's symbolic of engagement with, you know, spiritual forces, spiritual phenomena, and all kinds of lessons to be learned from these stories. In any case, just in the literal sense, he's saying that he was chasing a tzvi, and nechnasti b'tzich b'kulis shal meis. And on my chase, I entered the kulis, which is a thigh bone of a meis. And it was so giant and huge, I kept on running inside that limb. Rast the achrav shalosh parasol for three parasol. And I still couldn't reach the, I didn't catch up with the animal, but tzvi lo yigati. The kulis lay kolsan. I wasn't at the end of the kulis. Okay, I decided it's time to give up and go back home. Shechazat l'achayv, and I went back home, and I, you know, turned back, reverse. Amrli, they told me. Oh, not to wonder. You know, it was so big. Shal ayim al-cham bashan, I said, this was the limb of the giant, ayim al-cham bashan. Tanya, Abishol Aimer. Another story, Abishol, Kayo Misam Yisi. Pamachas, Niftacha Mara Tachtai. So I'm reburying over there, and suddenly the floor opened, and I'm in this burial cave. And I find myself standing, astonishingly, standing inside the Vamati, Gagal Einishal Mes Adchaitmi. I'm up to my nose in this deep eye socket of a mace. Shadat Lachoy, when I went back to, I left the area, unbelievable, my friend told me, Einishal Shalom. This is the eye of Avshalom, son of David HaMelech, who unfortunately was drawn after his desires and led astray by his eyes. Hence this huge eye representing the power of desire and the Koyach HaTuma. And the Marsha explains that the point is, he was standing in there, he felt totally enveloped by this tremendous power, this force of Tuma. And it reached all the way to the chaytim, to the nostrils, which is where the neshama is related to. And I, quickly turned around and detached myself from this tuma, to disengage from its effect. So you'll think, okay, it's not so impressive. How big could the socket have been? Abishol was a midget, very short. So up to his nostrils, not so grand. It's not true, he's very tall actually. Abishol Oruch B'Dorahav, he was the tallest of his generation, Rabbi Tarfon. And how tall was that? Rabbi Tarfon, Magiel Ksefer, Rabbi Tarfon, from a later generation, would only reach Magilek Seif only reach up to Rabbi Abba's shoulders. And you think Rabbi Tarfon was short. He himself was tall. Rabbi Tarfon, Oroch Badar, the tall one of his generation, Rabbi Meir. Who's after him? Magiel Seif would only reach up to the shoulders of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Meir, Oroch Badar, Chavan, he was the tallest of the generation. Rabbi and Rabbi, Magiel Seif would only reach his shoulders. Rabbi himself was Oroch Badar, Rabbi. Rabbi Chia would only reach his shoulders. Magiel Seif, Rabbi Chia himself was Oroch Badar, Rabbi. Rav, who was a later generation, Magiel Seif only reached his shoulders. And Rav himself was tall, Oroch Badar, Rabbi. Rabbi Yehuda, who came after Magid Seif, only reached his shoulders. Rabbi Yehuda, he was the tallest. The Ada Daila was his servant. His name was the Ada Daila, the Shamas, the leader of the Chacham. Magid Seif only reached his shoulders. Turn to the next Talmud. And to get an idea how tall Ada Daila was, so we have this fellow, Prash Devina, who came from Pumadisa. Prash Devina, the Pumadisa, Koyle, Ada Daila, Palgei. He would only reach up to half the height of Ada Daila. And how tall was this fellow? The Kuliyama, everybody else, Koi, they would only reach the Parsha Devina. The Prash Devina, the Pumbatis, Adchartse, only reach his, up to his waist. So you can figure Rabbi Shaul, who was the top of the line here, was super tall, and still when he ended up in the eye of Avshalom, he was overtaken up to his nostril. You can imagine how huge, how large size it was. And the Farshim point out that the Chacham Sofer adds that Kohat Rasha, that is just a metaphor, just presenting the concept of Koyach of Tumah and how to detach Koyach of Tumah. So he says that don't think Abishal was just a person of spiritual low stature. That he was, overtaken by the Koyach HaTumah, affected by it. No, Abishol was the tallest of the tallest of the tall, meaning the greatest of the great in ruchnius, in righteousness, in sitkas. And nevertheless, he felt affected by the Koyach HaTumah until he, forced himself, he detached and disengaged. The Mashal points out that regarding this story and the previous story of the thigh, that he's stuck in the thigh there, that the point is, you can't expect to be immune from Koyach HaTumah. Everybody's susceptible. Everybody has to protect himself from Koyach HaTumah, which seek to attack us on all sides. The only way is to totally turn around. Chazarta L'Acharya, turned around. I made a reverse. And then, once I disengaged, meaning you can't engage in Tahara and Tumah at the same time. A person feels overwhelmed and affected by negative impulse, negative spirits. The only solution is turn around and immerse in good things in Torah, but first you have to disengage. You can't be, straddling both at the same time. You're not going to really refer to yourself to really experience the beauty of Torah, beauty of Tefillah. You have to totally detach, disengage, identify with the Tahara, try to experience it, and slow going, eventually pick up and develop an appetite and really enjoy the bliss of Torah. Ashrecha b'ilu hazeh, and certainly b'ilu haba. Okay, let's recap today's daf. We spoke about the all kinds of defective fetuses, lo yaleinu, most of which don't qualify for tumas leida, they don't have validity. We have the atum, we have the panav musmasim, we have the double-backed one, we have all kinds of unfortunate situations. We spoke about an interesting question of the month, the count of the months regarding the birth of a behemoth vis-a-vis the birth of an Adam. We spoke about the story of Rabbi Yeshua, who recalled his own ruling after he was presented with the reasoning behind it. We have the next Mishnah with examples of things that do have status, things which don't. We concluded with the interesting stories of Abba Shaul. Okay, all the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabba.